Okay, guys, welcome to Deborah Gets Red Pilled. I think it's episode 22. It is Friday morning, January 8th, 2021. I'm here recording from the chicken room at my house in Milwaukee, Oregon. And I'm here with Deborah, my mother-in-law.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Are you awake?
A little bit.
How'd you sleep?
Kind of my usual. I never sleep.
You never sleep?
Never sleep soundly.
So those that Ambien withdrawals, huh?
Oh, that's been gone for years from my system. But yeah, that was a tough one.
Yeah. You Roseanne Barred me once, remember?
No. What did I say?
Of course you don't remember. You called me a racial slur for Italian people.
I don't recall.
Yeah.
It must have been my other personality took over that day.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I'm really excited for our guest today. She's getting set up right now, so we're going to get the business out of the way.
Awesome.
So you can reach us by email at DeborahGetsRedPilled@ProtonMail.com and find us on Twitter at DeborahGetsPilled and find us on Instagram. This week we got some fan mail from a guy named Anthony, who is from the Northern California Bay Area. And he just said he's really enjoying the show. He recently found it. He's enjoying hearing us talk about, you know, locations and stuff that he knows about from the Bay.
Cool.
And he gave us a nice little donation too. So
thank you, Anthony, from the Bay Area. Thank you so much.
And then recently this morning, my friend, my old buddy, Casey, I don't know if he wants me to say his last name, so I won't, Lunatic Dolphin on Instagram, sent me a bunch of text messages saying he's really enjoying the show. And last week on Ricky Veranda's Ripple Effect podcast, he said some really nice stuff about us on the show, so... He texted me and was like, Ricky Brandis or the Ripple Effect shouted you out on the show. They shouted out Truthzilla too. And yeah, so thanks, Ricky. You've been a huge help. And yeah, Casey's doing good. And he's always been kind of a conspiracy theorist guy, I think. And he's been playing in bands for a long time, some really well-known bands. He's played in the Cro-Mags and he's played in the Old Firm Casuals. His old band was called Never Healed, which was a really good Bay Area hardcore band. And currently he is playing with Powerhouse, who is a staple in the Oakland Bay Area hardcore scene. And he's also playing in another band, and he said it's pure... What do you say they're called? Let me check. They're called Earth Dogs. And he said it's pure brutality. And he said they've got lyrics with about like aliens and MK Ultra. And I was like, oh man, you should write us a theme song for the show. And he's into it. So
hey,
we might get a really cool theme song out of the deal.
Thanks.
But yeah, thanks for the positivity, Casey. It helps a lot. And yeah, so we got shouted out on Ripple Effect. And then on Wednesday night, I was just hanging out on the couch after work, and I got a text from Scott from Truthzilla. And he's like, our guest just canceled. And it's funny because it's a guest that we were supposed to have that canceled on us too. He's like, she canceled last minute. You want to come on with us? So I went on and did like an hour and 20 minute episode with them on Wednesday night. And
Is it out? Is that one out?
Yeah, it came out yesterday.
Okay.
So it was weird. They were all pretty pretty bummed out about what had been going on in on Wednesday. And they'd been watching the news a lot more than me, so I think like that had a severe effect on them.
Yeah.
I guess in Salem at our Capitol building, a bunch of people just got the shit beat out of them by the cops who are like peacefully protesting. So I went on there and tried to talk some logical sense to them and just, you know, kind of talk about what the cops are and what they've always been, and that they're not our friends. So, other than that, I'm really excited for our guest today. I've wanted to talk to her for a long time. She's not here yet. I just was messaging with her on Twitter, so she should be here soon. What have you been up to this week?
I've been pretty much glued to the TV since Tuesday.
Yeah.
Flipping around to different stations, but it's not pretty. It's pretty upsetting. I don't have words really.
What part of it's upsetting to you?
That it appears that they were so highly motivated and encouraged by the president. And that enough people should have known to have, and I know you're not a big fan of the police, but why is it that there were so many National Guard and police on the ready for Black Lives Matter?
Well, I'm going to stop you right there.
Okay.
How many unarmed women in the Black Lives Matter protests this summer got shot in the throat with a 5.56 bullet and died?
None that I know of.
Exactly.
I'm sure there were
none.
So
you see this fucking midwit idiot fucking Kamala Harris tweeting that there's like a discrepancy in the amount of force used between BLM and apparent what just, oh, everybody's a white supremacist because they're a Trump supporter. You know, you see the discrepancy.
No,
between the force that's used by them. And yeah, there is a discrepancy in force. A woman who was unarmed got shot in the throat and died. And, you know,
I'm not going to defend anybody who was a shooter. That's not my intention. However, if there had been appropriate amount of defense, maybe things wouldn't have, you know, reached a point where somebody had to pull out their gun.
Why does somebody have to pull out their gun? Because they went into a building and were taking selfies
because
Nancy Pelosi's throne.
Defense was underrepresented.
None of those people were even armed.
That's not true. Some of them did have weapons.
The people inside the Capitol building?
Yeah.
You have video proof of this?
No, I don't.
Okay, then why are you saying that?
Because that's what I was told on the news.
Why do you believe that?
Well, when you're seeing stuff on video, I know they can
seen videos of them opening the doors and letting those people in, the cops.
And I've seen videos of them, you know, breaking windows and charging in.
Yeah.
My point about being underrepresented is that, you know, had there been enough people defending the building, maybe it wouldn't have resulted in violence because there would have been enough people there.
And why do you even care that, like, why is a sacred, like, you view that building as being like a sacred monument to fucking whatever?
If people stormed, you know, building.
People stormed businesses all summer long and burned them to the ground and beat the shit out of people and stole their merchandise, and they got arrested and let out of jail 2 hours later, you know, at the worst. So you think that people going into a government building is worse than people going and burning down some, you know, poor family's, you know, multi-generational family-owned business that's completely ruined now?
No, I don't think it's worse, but I think it's equally bad.
Why? Why is that equally bad to ruin somebody's life? Burning down their business is equally as bad as some fucking idiot with horns on taking a selfie in Nancy Pelosi's throne.
I don't know how to answer that. I just feel like this shouldn't have happened.
No, it shouldn't have happened, but it's not the same thing.
Well, it maybe not, you know, yeah, they didn't lose their livelihood and they're gonna, you know, fix up the Capitol building and everything's gonna go on as before. But that doesn't make it less evil.
Sorry, I was looking at my phone. So you think breaking into the Capitol building is on equal level evil with burning down a small business?
I don't know how to say this, that I don't know how to respond.
I think I got you on this one. But I don't even believe that those people were I believe those people are all agent provocateurs who were led into the building. And are you familiar with what that means?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, our guest was there and she's in the waiting room. So we're going to pause now and we're going to let her in. All right, guys, we're back. We're here with our guest today. She's a fantastic comedian. She's an online vigilante against the rampant child porn on Twitter.
Don't forget domestic terrorists.
Yeah. She's taken dance classes with Tim Dillon. She's a competitive springboard diver. She's a prolific podcaster, both on her own show and on her other show, The Wet Spot, on Compound Media. And she's recently been red-pilled. And we're so happy to have you here. Our guest today is Chrissy Mayer.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for that very comprehensive intro, because most places just focus on comedy or podcasting achievements. No, you went all the way back to high school and you're like, let's talk about diving.
Yeah. Even before high school, when you were in dance classes with Tim Dillon.
People need to know about my other achievements. I still have the record at my college. Nobody ever talks about it.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, I've been really excited to talk to you, and I've been listening to, I probably found you, I think, through Sam Tripoli, who I found most everybody that I listen to. That's how I found me too. Yeah, somehow links back to him. But I've been a fan of your podcast. You've got a really good mix of people that you have on. You have a lot of recently converted conservative people, and you have a lot of porno chicks, and then you have conspiracy people too. And I think the coolest thing that I found from your podcast is that apparently every porno chick is into QAnon.
Well, so. Not everyone. It's there's a real divide in porn, just like there is every other industry. There's one, and I see so many similarities between porn and an entertainment industry in general, especially the comedy industry. There's sort of the wokey, lefty, liberally part of the mob. They obey, they behave, they spout out all the MSM talking points. They're on good behavior, right? They're doing what they're told, and those are the ones that end up being kind of industry darlings and getting certain opportunities. And then there's the folks that think for themselves, who tend to be in the middle on the right, or they're not identifying in a group at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So you went down to Washington, D.C. yesterday, right?
Oh, yeah. I was there from Tuesday through Thursday.
Cool.
Thinking that the events would only be on Wednesday, but things started up Tuesday night, Tuesday afternoon, like they were already like meetups and speaking, and people were pumped. Yeah.
So yeah, before you came on, we were just Deborah and I were talking a little bit, and to her, what happened was like the most disgusting display of domestic terrorism that's like ever occurred. Okay, well let's
is Deborah your mom, by the way?
She's my mother-in-law.
Oh, this is such a cute idea. This is a great concept.
Yeah, thank you. By the way,
because like there's no you're never gonna force anybody to change their mind ever. And that's where people on the left and the right have it wrong. It's like it's through conversations. It's like it's good to explain things from the position of like I have no idea about this, or I'm totally on the other side. So I don't know. I just appreciate the way you break stuff down.
So let's try something out. Deborah, you tell us what you saw through your glasses.
And, what I saw through my glasses.
And then we'll have Chrissy tell us what she saw actually being there.
Yeah. Was upsetting. Yes. And Adam, you were trying to get me to explain why it was more upsetting than other protests going on this summer where people's, you know, small businesses were burned to the ground. It's not that it's more upsetting. It's not more upsetting, but it is at least equally upsetting to see any kind of violence or destructive behavior. That's upsetting to me. And, you know, this was on a larger scale. It just, you know, people associate that building with, you know, the citadel, the heart of our democracy or whatever they think. So it was just on a larger scale.
I mean, like whole cities got burned down and stuff. So
I can understand how it felt. Large to Deborah and like the optics, because it was large. There were like, I mean, people will offer different numbers. I mean, I would believe that there was a million people in DC. Everywhere I looked, it was packed. It was shoulder to shoulder. It was, and I think it seems like a lot all at once. Whereas like we like, you know, Trump support has really just had like November, December, and this past week to come out. Whereas I think people that are support of BLM or defund the police or their Antifa or whatever they support, that's like, I guess on the other side, they've had kind of like all summer. Oh, my, speaking of mother-in-law, mine is calling me. Nope. It's podcast time, Regina. they've kind of had all summer and like what feels like more time to do their demonstrating and their protesting and their rioting and their looting. And it's like, it was kind of like incessant through what feels like a broader amount of time. Whereas like, I think most people were not really aware of the November, the Million MAGA March. And I think most people were not really aware of the December March. So I can see how like the optics of this past week was like, oh shit, that's a lot of people. Cause it was a lot of people. And I think people were like, you know, there was different events. Like, you know, I think started Wednesday, we're on like the presidential lawn or the ellipse or whatever. And there were, you know, a bunch of different speakers, and there's just, oh my God, we got there so early, but we still couldn't even get anywhere near the stage. And I went with a fellow YouTuber friend of mine. Her name is Riss Flex. She has a channel. She's also into like conspiracy theories, but we both just have gotten into covering these rallies, and we wanted to get like close, you know, and like, but we were so far back. And every time we did a wide shot or like a panoramic, or even just like, you know, walk in a circle, it was like people as far as you could see. And where I was and I got so much shit from just being in Washington, D.C. this week, which I hadn't seen from November or December. So I guess people are noticing different things, and the media really doesn't help. It's like the media has done a really good job of painting Trump like the enemy. And also, anybody who even looks like they support Trump is now also the enemy by default. And the problem with that is that that is about 75 million people. So when you have 75 million people who you're at war with, like there's of course, that's not gonna end well. But I think people, you know, and that was one of the events. So after we were listening to the speakers at the the president's lawn, it was like, okay, we're gonna go to the Capitol at one. That was like a planned event. And then so the idea that we like stormed the Capitol was, you know, that it was like the sporadic thing, I think is misleading. It was just planned that we were gonna like walk over to the Capitol building. It was never like in anybody's program, like we're gonna bust in. Although I don't know, I don't roll with the groups that are like trying to create mayhem. Like I really was there to just cover this event and like give my fans and friends and family, be like, hey, this is what I'm seeing. So you have a choice to look at what I'm seeing or believe what you're seeing on the mainstream media. Like, that's it. I wasn't there looking to like scale a wall. Although I did climb on top of this one little, you know, when they have construction and they have these like makeshift offices.
Yeah, it's called a Connex.
Oh yeah. I was like, yes, I'm going to get a great shot if I go up there. Cause I'm 5'3" and I can't, you know, when there's a lot of tall people around, I'm like, I can't see shit. So I was like, I am going to climb on top of that and get a good shot, as other people were too. And so everybody that I was around, you know, marching with, it's just walking. It's just like, there's a lot of fun. I've met like really funny, cool people. There's so many people with just funny signs. Like there was a man in a skeleton costume with a sign that says, I voted for Biden 9 times, which is like, that's hilarious. I love that so much. Like, that's why I go to these things, is to like meet the kooky, interesting people. I met a guy who was selling fruit who came all the way up from Miami, who was like, I just want people to be healthy. Like, I'm just here. And he had all these like kooky fruits that I can't even remember the names of, you know. Like, I like talking to that guy. I like talking to people who are like losing their businesses, who like are actually feeling hurt and frustrated. Like, I'm not interested in, nor am I friends with people who are looking to like destroy, bust in, you know. Like, I didn't know anybody who would like, yeah, I sat at Pelosi's desk, fuck that bitch. Like, that's really such a small percentage. As you could say with BLM, there's a small percentage of those folks that were really, you know, insistent on creating damage and mayhem and chaos. So, you know, I feel like Trump supporters are getting like very unfairly targeted now. And you know what? If nobody like entered the Capitol building, I know how the media would have treated the event. They would have been like, oh, it was underattended. It was a non-event. There was barely anybody there, because that's what they did in November. They did a flyover shot at like 6 a.m. before people were really there. There was like maybe, a, you know, 20% of the total people there that were getting there super early. Like, oh, look at this pathetic event. There's barely anybody here. I know that's what it would have happened if there was no like, you know, mayhem at the Capitol. They would have disregarded the whole event. So I don't know, like I go to these things and I think it's really unfair to the 99.999% of people at these rallies. They're just there to like have their voices heard. They're good people. They love their country. They're afraid of losing their freedoms. They're, you know, they're just afraid for their kids and their grandkids. And like the more folks I spoke to, the more they're like, yeah, I'm whatever. I'm 50, 60, 70 years old. Like, I'm here for my grandkids, because I don't want them to grow up in a fucking socialist or communist or, you know, whatever their fears are. It's like the MAGA people get pegged as such like evil, shitty, dumb rednecks, you know? And it's like, I haven't met any of those people. The people I've met have been just regular folks and the most diverse group of people. Yeah, but of course, it's like, no matter what's going on, it's never good to see people get hurt. I mean, the girl that was shot and killed was unarmed. She had like a Trump flag like around her neck, like a cape. It's like, does that person deserve to die? I don't think so. To me, it didn't seem like she was doing anything different than like dozens of other people were doing. So it's like, well, why weren't dozens of people shot then? So it's like, why was she shot instead of other people? So I mean, I get it. Mistakes can happen. And then a couple of other people died because they like had heart attacks, you know, that were like unrelated, that maybe worked there or whatever. So, but that doesn't make it any less upsetting. It's just, I think the media coverage of it is so unfair. And I think that people on the center or on the right get painted one way, and then people on the left are justified and they get to have freedom of speech because they're upset. And it's okay when their protesting isn't peaceful because theirs is justified. But people in the middle and on the right, it's not justified. They're sore losers. They can't accept reality. And it's like, the reality is our election was stolen. And that's what's making a lot of people angry. They just feel like nothing they do or say is working, and that every, the powers that be have taken, it's all out of our hands, you know? So I don't know if that like helps to explain, like it is, it's very, very upsetting to see anybody get hurt or killed or beat up on, or, and that's the thing, of course, the footage of chaos happening is going to get picked up and get more clicks and be spread around more. But like what I was taught, and I was there all day, I was there for like 3 days. I mean, I'm going to call it mostly 2 days. And then because Thursday I was like doing a podcast, wrapping up and leaving. But what I saw, I didn't see any, you know, crazy people. I didn't see violence. It's just people standing around with flags or their funny costume or their funny sign or their dog. I petted a lot of dogs. That's really what I spent most of my time doing, was like petting dogs and interviewing people. But it's so it sucks that like 75 million people are being characterized over the actions of like a couple dozen.
Do you think, I mean, where my brain goes immediately is those aren't like real people that were like the first ones to go into the Capitol building. And I've seen videos of them being ushered in by the police. I think that maybe a couple, you know, agent provocateurs were sent to do that. And then, you know, people followed behind them or something like that. What are your thoughts on that?
It's definitely possible. And I've talked to so many people who work kind of up closer to the action, more like journalist types. And they're like, yeah, it's very suspect, because they saw people with, damn, like they saw people.
I was just listening because Jason Burmess was,
yes,
on the show.
Yes, Jason. Yeah,
so I was listening to it right before I got on with you guys, but I didn't hear.
He's
all
like,
of it.
Normal people, normal like Americans, patriots, whatever. Don't bring a sledgehammer to a rally, to a march. Like someone who brings a sledgehammer to a rally or a march, like that's somebody who's coming to fuck shit up. And like I remember at one point, and Jason I think said this on the episode of my podcast that got released today. You know, this guy or whoever was like passing this sledgehammer up to the front so that somebody can use it. And then the person at the front was just like, no, and like gave it to the cops. And there's been a lot of eyewitnesses of Trump supporters like pulling people down off of windows, stopping others from creating damage and chaos and breaking shit. So it's like I've seen a lot of instances of that. So that gives me hope, because it's like, oh yeah, that resonates with what I saw, because I was there and I didn't see a lot of people like that. And you know, there were also people there. Jason saw somebody, you know, it almost was like there's a certain group of people who knew right where to go, because if you told me like, oh, get into the Capitol building, how would you do it? I'd be like, I don't know. Every single wall looks the same. Like if this is, you know, I don't even know where to go. But it's supposedly this group seemed to know just where to go. And somebody brought wire cutters. Again, like, who brings wire cutters to a rally? Like, that's, I didn't even bring my contact solution. You know, it's like, who remembers to bring that shit? So it's there's definitely enough evidence and eyewitness accounts to support that there were a group of perhaps instigators. Who knows if they were Antifa? Who knows if they were planted there? But I wouldn't say it's not possible. Course it's possible.
Yeah, and I believe that you know, there could be normal people that went there to cause destruction as well. And to be fair, you know, I saw videos over the summer of people doing the same thing, of like people at BLM riots like stopping people from smashing windows out and stuff like that. But yeah. Deborah, what do you, after hearing Chrissy's account of what she saw in person, what are your thoughts?
That, I mean, the result is still the same, isn't it? I mean, you know, hopefully it's no better or no worse if there were people planted there. I mean, it's still an upsetting thing to happen. I don't know what you're, I mean, aren't you, obviously I'm upset and I'm not able to articulate what it is that's upsetting me, but it's just, I mean, not so looking.
I think the disconnect we're having, sorry to interrupt, is that you hold like those buildings to be some sort of like sacred, like church type things. And I think they're just places where mass murderers go to meet every day and figure out how to bomb little brown babies.
I don't think they're sacred. It matters not to me that it was a government building. If it had been any building, it will still be upsetting to see people going in to cause destruction.
Is it more or less upsetting than seeing people break into a small business and steal shit or like burn it down?
It's the same to me. It's the same. Yeah.
But during this, oh, sorry, Chrissy.
Oh, it's
during,
okay. I'm just because.
Go ahead.
I want to know because Deborah, what do you, if you could like narrow down, like what is the most upsetting part of what you saw? Was it that some girl got shot? Was it that some people broke windows? Was it the fact that people were able to get in to the Capitol building? Like if you could narrow it down to what is really upsetting you.
It's just that people were being destructive and causing damage and you know, creating an environment where people got hurt and killed.
But you didn't have this same reaction to the violence that was going on all summer long in multiple cities.
You're right. I didn't.
And I'm trying to figure out what the difference is.
Well, that's what happens is like, and I think Aaron, no, it was Sam Tripoli who had a really good tweet about this. It's like, this is what happens now. Someone gets shot and killed and people have to first check with what side of the aisle they're on, what they believe before they can let themselves be upset or not. And I think that's what's happened to our culture is like, it's like, it's okay for certain people to get shot and killed. It's okay for certain destruction to happen. And it's not okay for other destruction to happen. And it's like,
I have to confess, you're right, that when I heard about the woman who was shot and killed, you know, my first thought was, God, I hope it wasn't the police who did it. Because somehow that would
look worse than like a civilian killing her.
Mm-hmm.
But they were unarmed. None of the people who came into the Capitol building, none of them had, in fact, it was like widely talked about before the rally, like nobody better be carrying at this because you'll be in deep shit. So.
Well, what about the person you said who had the sledgehammer?
Well, I'm talking about armed weapons. I'm talking about guns.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think a sledgehammer is a weapon.
Oh,
too.
For sure it is. For sure it is. And like somebody who brings a sledgehammer to that's not a good person. And it's like, yeah, that's a clear motivation there. But you're not seeing, you know, 100,000 people walking around carrying sledgehammers. So it's like you have to know that's a really small minority. Right.
Yeah.
I've heard that people that watch the video, firearms experts have said that it seems like it was probably a negligent discharge. Like the guy had really poor trigger discipline and was in a high stress situation, and still not an excuse, you know.
That's what I was trying to say about, you know, being underrepresented, that, you know, you're in a high stress situation. Maybe it wouldn't have been so stressful had there been more police representation or whatever there.
And there wasn't. And many people have commented on this, like, why the hell weren't there more cops? And like, my understanding is that the police enforcement is so segmented in DC, like the Capitol building has its own police. The DC Metro has its own police. The White House has Secret Service. And they're really not allowed to go into each other's turfs, which is odd, because I remember I was like, I went a long time without seeing any kind of cops at all. Like it was like almost just like, oh, we're in Central Park. Like that's how little cops I saw. I was like, everyone's just standing around chilling. And, but I also was told that the mayor, you know, called off, you know, that the mayor kind of called off cops, and, maybe they tried to call in the National Guard, but that was rejected by the Pentagon. But there's a lot of different like theories going around as to why there were not as many cops as there should have been. And who knows, I think it's part of this larger trend, because I think this summer with BLM, a lot of the cops like scaled back their usual tactics in terms of like breaking up crowds or really dealing with like aggressive individuals because they're so afraid of being seen as racist or too handsy. And I think those practices did start over the summer. So they really pulled back on that. And I remember being at a barbecue like over the summer and there was this NYPD guy telling me like, yeah, we really can't touch people anymore. Like we can't touch their chest. We can't, we're so limited. It's like, you basically just let people go. And I think that has sort of spread out over the, for the policing for the whole country. Like cops were so scared to lose their jobs, to be called racist, to be caught on somebody's camera. And that's the thing, they are in such a high stress situation and maybe they are like trigger nervous or whatever. And so I think that was established over the summer. It was, they didn't think to switch it up or change it for this Trump rally. So I think there were some things in place that made it so that there was less of a police presence or not an effective enough of a police presence for the past couple of days or for, yeah, just January 6th, really.
Yeah. That, yeah. Like I live just like right outside of Portland, Oregon. So yeah, during the summertime here, the police pretty much completely stood down. And if anybody had done anything that was like severe enough to be arrested, our district attorney or whatever just released them like a couple hours later with no charges. I was on a podcast on Wednesday night with Truthzilla, and we were just talking about, you know, like the police. I don't support the police. I don't like cops. So I've had negative experiences with them my whole life, but they don't care like which side people are on. They just are blindly do what they're told. And, you know, and I think, what I talked about on that show, I think what this, all this civil unrest and stuff that's coming from the right, from conservatives and right wingers is going to do is going to red pill all these people who have like traditionally loved the cops and had backed the blue flags everywhere are getting red pilled on what the police really are. And to me, that's a good thing. So
I think at the end of the day, like the cops, if it's like stand up for what you believe in or what you might think is right, if it's that or keep your job and feed your family, they're going to choose keep your job and feed your family, especially now. It's like it's a hard time. The idea of getting a different job in this time is very stressful. So
it's still,
and I can see how now the cops are part of this. They're now an arm of the government, the corrupt government, and they behave, they obey, so they get to keep their jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. If my job was to like go and take people's liberties and freedom away, I wouldn't do it even for money to feed my family. So,
and you look at Staten Island, like I talked to a cop actually, and I was like, how do you feel about cops, you know, getting this bad rap now? Now you're associated with shutting down small businesses and like kind of like not letting people earn a living. You know, you're enforcing these unlawful mandates, these unconstitutional mandates. And he was saying like, well, actually the folks who shut down that bar in Staten Island, like those were sheriffs, that those were like more just law enforcement that were like kind of from out of town, because all the local cops, none of them wanted to touch that bar in Staten Island. They were like, not about it. You know, they had their minds made up that that was not the right thing to do. So they actually had to like go above their heads or out of their jurisdiction, out of their area, because the police, they're like, this is our neighborhood. We know these people. We're not going to do that. We know it's wrong. So they actually had to.
What happened on Staten Island? I'm not aware.
There was this bar, and the name is like not coming to me right now.
Matt Max.
Yeah, Matt Max, and he just was like staying open despite the closings because he just wanted to make a living, and I think he got arrested at one point. And I think he may have gotten sued at one point, but then that sort of fell through. Yeah.
They did the thing where they give him like tons of fines and eventually arrested him.
Yeah. And he, just for him trying to stay open. And he even like, which I appreciated because it was funny. At one point he had like autonomous zone, like going across his bar, which I think was great. And at one point he was just like giving out, you know, free drinks or like food or whatever. So it's just like this guy's desperately trying to still make a living, and they just were shutting him down for it.
Yeah. I think what that's a good example of is like, even if there are cops that won't enforce like stuff that's not a crime, they'll just find people that will eventually. So,
you know. Right.
So I think that's a good stopping point for that topic. I can tell Deborah's still a little upset about it.
It is upsetting. It's so upsetting. It shouldn't be happening. It's like, we all are like, why can't we all just get along? Like, I feel that way too. I get so upset. Like, my heart actually hurts when I'm like, I read these comments from peers of mine, like comedy peers of mine, people that I've done shows with. I've done comedy for like 10 years. Like, if I want to count from when I started doing improv, which was like 2006, how many years is that? 14 years? 14. There's people I've known over the last 14 years through either improv or a stand-up that I've like, you know, someone I took a class with, somebody I was on a show with, which is a lot of people. It might be like, it's probably more than 100 people. There's a lot of fucking comics in New York City. Not all of them great, but they all felt so emboldened to throw in their two cents. Like I was like looking through, I'm like, oh, so many people just like tweeting about me that I'm a shitty person just for like being at this march, just for being there. People, the gossip and the rumors flying around, like, oh, she's storming the Capitol, she's a domestic terrorist, anybody who knows her needs to unfriend her, block her. We need to make a list of all, I swear to God, we need to make a list of all the New York comics who we saw at the march so we can remember, so that, well, when comedy comes back, we can never book these people. And it's like, not to sound like egotistical, but all these people, none of them are like above me career-wise. They're like, it's a great distraction from focusing on your own self and your own life and your own career. And it's like, yeah, they say the booze come from the cheap seats. And it's like, and also it's like within the comedy community, it's like there's a lot of like this desperate attempt to like kiss somebody's ass for spots and like get in with the right people, when it's really is like your career is what you make of it. And it was very upsetting for me to see these people. I'm like scrolling through these names of people talking shit about me, and I'm like, I ran a show at the Stonewall in New York City, LGBT, also national landmark, for 6 years. It was like literally the best LGBT show in the city. 6 years, which is like forever in comedy years. And I'm looking through these names of people talking shit. She's a horrible person. She's a terrorist. She's scum. She's a white nationalist. She's a white supremacist. Just for me being in DC with a camera taking video. That's literally all I did. And I'm like, wow, I gave that guy a spot 5 years ago. I know this girl from improv. I took an acting class with this girl. And meanwhile, these are not friends. These are people who I like, you know, you interact with through doing comedy for whatever, 14 years. And it broke my heart. I was like, oh, wow. Because I know that these nasty comments have nothing to do with how I've treated all these people, because like, I'm super fucking nice. When I produce comedy shows for years, I just want to like provide stage time for people. I want a good experience for the audience as well. I want to help out my fellow person, my fellow comic, you know, because it's a hard fucking industry to be in. And I'm like, I know that these nasty comments have nothing to do with how I've treated people, but 100% to do with what they think my political beliefs are. And I was like, that to me is the most heartbreaking thing, because then, it doesn't matter what you do, how you live your life, how you treat people. Only thing that matters is if people consider you like an outsider or they disagree with your political beliefs, which is like, which breaks my heart. Cause it's like, I didn't have beef with any of these people. And a lot of them, like, I've never met, never spoken to, but they're all like authorities on me and like how I've changed and the direction I'm heading in. And it's like, my DMs are open. A lot of these people have my phone number. Do they ever reach out to me privately to even be like, hey, what was up with you being at the Trump rally? Or hey, like, what's going on? No, these people never reach out privately, but they're very emboldened to just tweet and talk shit. Some of them don't even like tag me in it. Some of them put asterisks in my name so that I can't search for who's talking shit, but I find it anyway. So that's
no,
what's upsetting.
There's no risk in doing that. And they're getting virtue signaling points from the people that are in their world from doing stuff. Yeah, like
absolutely.
That.
I would never dream of, like, I saw people go to BLM protests. Great. They should. Like, people are like, what are you doing there? I'm like, it's free speech. And I support your constitutional right to demonstrate your free speech, go to whatever rallies you want to go to. And I wouldn't dream of giving somebody shit, let alone almost like, you know, people trying to report me to the FBI just for being in DC. It's like, you're delusional. And I couldn't dream of doing that to somebody whose beliefs that I didn't share. It's like, that's a special kind of mental illness to me.
Well, do you think it's always been that way, or has it become more so lately?
I think it's become more so lately. I think Trump's presidency, the powers that be really did not expect him to win, really did not, because there was fraud in 2016. Hillary Clinton paid something like $4 billion to Dominion to jack up the votes, like I think to get 22% more. And it still wasn't enough because Trump got 75% of the vote. And what looked like a very close race really wasn't. Like Trump won big in 2016, but it didn't look that way to us because there was fraud. And I think that really pissed off the powers that be so much. They're like, we got to fucking put our all into demonizing this guy and his supporters. Like they just could not get over that he won and that he kind of disrupted the system so much.
So you feel like in past years, opposing parties could still get along and respect one another and not demonize one another and villainize one another.
Absolutely. I remember growing up in the 90s, like I just was like, eh, it just was not on everyone's, it wasn't something people were talking about all the time. You know, it was like, yeah, a little bit during an election year, but eh, like not something I would notice so much. It was like, all right, George W. Bush. All right. He's sort of derpy. Like, he says funny things, but that was it. And like, yeah, people got jazzed about Obama, but there was no intense hatred for someone that was going to vote for Mitt Romney, or like intense hatred about somebody who liked John McCain. It just was like,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. We have differing opinions about the direction we want to go, but you're still a human being. And so am I, and we can.
Right. And like social media absolutely didn't help. And we all know, like, you know, whose pockets Twitter and Facebook are in and who they're loyal to. And they have a ton of influence. And I mean, we know there was mass censorship going on. Like like Facebook content moderators, you know, caught on hidden camera or whatever, being like, happily, we will delete a Trump supporter's tweet. We will happily delete Republican conservative Facebook groups. Like they do it with like pride, and they're like, yeah, we're being like loyal to whoever, like happily delete these folks. And we know that happens on Twitter too, like just purging anybody. That's what like really got me so upset, Deborah, is over the summer, is like watching Twitter like purge and suspend people who like might believe in Q but do nothing to combat child porn and do nothing to take down like certain accounts. Like the amount of hoops I had to jump through to just report a couple of Twitter accounts that had child porn on them, it should not be that difficult. And to just see the mismanagement, like to see what their values are, is like really upsetting. And it all contributes to this like really like tense like environment right now.
Yeah. Deborah isn't on Twitter. Can you, I had it written down as a question I was going to talk with you about, is can you kind of go through the story about that whole Twitter child porn debacle that you went through?
God, you know what? Yeah, because like I've become curious about the people that follow this like Q movement, and they get a bad rap too, that they're insane, that they're crazy. But I think mostly they're a lot of people that are very passionate and anti-child porn. That's the long and short of it. Like sex trafficking, human trafficking, like they're really fired up about that not being something that so many people you know, benefit from financially. And of course it gets into like political blackmail too. But at the end of the day, people just care about the kids and the missing kids and why like hundreds of thousands of kids go missing every year. It doesn't seem to be more important. So I think, God, how did this come to be? Like, I don't know. I think just folks were like tagging me on some accounts. They were like, wow, you gotta like check this out, which sucks. Nobody ever wants to be like, oh God, I'm about to click on this profile and I might see some shit I really don't want to see. Like I went 37 years of my life, like not seeing anything like this. I always thought you had to go to like the deep, dark web to see this kind of shit. And here it is. It's in Twitter. It's in our pockets. You can get there in less than 10 clicks. So
actual child porn videos.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's wow. Like, it's really heartbreaking because I was like, I'd never seen it. I didn't even know you just don't think about it because it's just not on your mind. But I was like, oh my God, like this is so sick that this is up here. And there's so many accounts, like videos, photos. And it's like, oh my God, you're like these poor fucking kids. And then like, you're like the fact that Twitter cares more about like deleting folks who believe in Q than they do like accounts that are like creating and spreading around this trash is like, that to me is like so evil. And it's like, I can't put my trust in people who are in charge of social media platforms if this is where their values lie. So that really opened my eyes to just like how much corruption there is just on social media and how social media has really become like an arm of the government.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like people like to say, oh, 10 years ago, it was better because you could have all these Facebook groups with like differing opinions. And that's the thing. It's like if it's a differing opinion that the powers that be can easily dismiss, like flat earth, people don't get censored as much because it's easier to dismiss that as fake and ridiculous. And those people are really crazy. Oh, but the fact that there might be like a global elite pedophile ring, like, well, that's a little too believable for some people. They might look into that. Let's get these people out of here.
Yeah, but then they're dismissed as like just I'm not a QAnon guy, but I think it was kind of, in my opinion, QAnon was created just to lump people that were like looking into stuff that was actually really happening and just dismiss it as like a QAnon conspiracy theorist.
Oh yeah,
theory. Because
for years like, they were dismissing Jeffrey Epstein being a pedophile and having an island, you know.
And then like yeah. So what's going on? What I see happening is like people believe that Jeffrey Epstein had that, but then like the media will say that the fact that there's elite pedophile rings is just a QAnon conspiracy theory. It's like Deborah and I did an episode on the Franklin scandal. And I think she believes that was like a real thing that really happened. Are you familiar with that one, Chrissy?
The Franklin, was that about like a
school, the one where they were in the 80s and early 90s they were trafficking children out of Boys Town out of the Franklin credit scandal in Credit Union in Omaha, Nebraska. So people like believe that, and that's like proven fact. People believe in Epstein, but then like when Donald Trump went on, and let's be honest, I'm not a Trump fan either, but when Donald Trump went on like that town hall meeting and that the moderator woman was like, will you deny that there are elite pedophile rings as a QAnon conspiracy theory, you know, but you know, people know that Jeffrey Epstein is real. So.
It's in a very effective tactic is to just like group everyone that believes a certain thing in a way that makes them look insane. It's like you take somebody's credibility away because that's what's much easier to do. This is an actual like media or war tactic or whatever. It's like what's easier to do is like take every single one of their points and prove why they're wrong and be like, what if the shit is true? You know what I mean? Like, well, you can't prove, you know, it's much easier to discredit somebody or a whole group of people who believe a thing than it is to dispute their claims.
Yeah. And and just to cancel them now is what can happen.
Oh, just today I'm seeing Facebook banned the walkaway movement, which is just like, which was a group or a movement started by Brandon Straka. He's like a gay guy, was a liberal his whole life and really just gained popularity over the last, I guess, like, yeah, 6-9 months, definitely in 2020, of just like, yeah, the Democratic Party is not serving my interests. I don't feel heard. I'm just walking away. Like, they weren't necessarily a pro-Trump group, although that's like where a lot of them meet up and speak are at these rallies. And I was really like, I felt like closely aligned with them because I'm like, yeah, I'm still a registered Democrat. Like I was a fucking women's studies minor. I was like, I'd graduated college telling everybody what a big feminist I was. I don't need a man. Like I was drinking all of that Kool-Aid. I was all about it. And then I only kind of just got sort of like, you know, I don't know if I can't find the right words, but like, I just was like disappointed with the Democratic Party, and I just felt like they were full of shit. So I was like, yeah. And so then I see like the walk away movement. I'm like, oh yeah, that feels true to me. And, but the fact that these guys are getting banned now, and they're not even necessarily, but they didn't start out to be necessarily pro-Trump. They just were like anti-Democratic Party. And now that these guys are getting banned, it's like telling me, it's like, wow, we can't even walk away from the Democratic Party anymore. That's what's happening. That's how fucking dangerous it is. It's like, if Zuckerberg and like, it's Instagram, Twitter. I think Trump has been banned from something like how many different social media sites at this point? Yeah, that's what's really scary. Is like
totally banned off Twitter right now.
I think he's totally banned from Facebook. I think Instagram. What is the latest?
He was banned for 12 hours on Twitter. Maybe he was banned again. I don't know. Because he was back on.
He tweeted something about like not wanting violence and wanting people to like go home the other day, and he got I guess banned for that. Even though he's trying to tell people to not be violent. So it's like, if the people in charge of these social media companies are more powerful than the president, like that should alarm people.
Yeah. And it's a one-way street. So that's the thing that's the worst, because nobody else from the other side is getting banned. And
You brought up the video that he made telling people to go home. I felt like that was totally insincere.
Yeah, he's a politician, Deborah. They're all insincere.
Okay. All right.
What do you think? Who's a sincere politician who's made something that was it really sincere when Nancy Pelosi said that $600 is a significant amount of money for a working family? You know, the fact that like she is so removed from the world and like ever having to like operate independently, like on her own, to her, she probably thinks that $600 is a significant amount of money for people like us.
Yeah, because they're so out of touch. Like that's what being either rich or powerful affords you the luxury of. Like you can't even conceptualize what the average American is doing or what is like a lot of money to them. They're so out of touch, and it's like, and that's why not having term limits is such a huge problem. Because it's just, it allows people to just keep being out of touch.
Yeah, but I agree, Deborah. I think it was probably totally insincere. I don't think anything that he does is sincere, because he might disagree with me. But yeah.
No, I can see that.
So let's see. What? So you have the typical, you know, leave the left story. What kind of woke you up? And I kind of wonder what prompted your journey from blue pilled to red pilled. And I don't want to say that, like, I know that I'm talking more about conspiracies than going from like liberal to more conservative views.
And it kind of is the same. It came down to like freedom of speech. I was like, wait a minute, like comedy is great because we are like, in a sense, like you're making fun of yourself. You're making fun of stereotypes. Every single one of us has laughed at a joke or a story that had something to do with a stereotype about somebody else. And you're lying if you say you haven't. So it's like, for me, yeah, it was
Deborah,
like,
Deborah laughed at the word darky the other day on our podcast. So.
I did.
Yeah.
Are you taking this out of context?
On the whiskey, beer, and conspiracies one, those guys.
Yeah, yeah. What did I do?
The guy was like, Chris was talking about, or Big Country was saying, he said something where he was like impersonating like a redneck, and he said, "We got to keep those darkies, da 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 da," and you laughed.
That's a funny thing. Maybe she was laughing at like the kind of person who would say such a thing.
It's funny. It's funny.
It's like you laugh when somebody says.
It's an okay thing to laugh at, is what I'm saying.
It's like when someone says, like if my dad were to say something about an Oriental rug or something, you know what I mean? It's just like, I don't know, when he says describes a person as Oriental, it's like you laugh because someone is out of touch too. There's a lot of reasons why things make us laugh. And it's like, it's okay to not, Yeah, it's okay to laugh at what you want to laugh at, because a laugh is a response that you don't have control over. Like, I've laughed at stuff that's not politically correct. I've made jokes that are like a little wrong, but if it makes other people laugh, like, that's what I kind of go off of. It's like, I'm here to make people happy and bring like levity to life. So when I started to notice like that the freedom of speech thing was kind of coming into comedy, and like the thing that I love to do, and like my expression and the way that I feel like good in the world, because I got into comedy because like I didn't feel like I could talk to my parents about how I really felt, like people in my family, and that's my sort of whatever childhood damage is, like I grew up like with this feeling like nobody gives a shit how you feel. Like if you have a complaint about something, it means you're making a big deal about something, you know? And like, that's been my whatever, like work as an adult. But when I started getting into comedy, I felt so free. I was like, oh wow, I can express myself to a room full of strangers and I feel way more comfortable than I do talking to people I've known my whole life. So when I noticed, and then of course it grows, and you know, part of it's ego, but of course part of it is like, you want to make a room full of people a little bit happier and forget about their problems, right? So now it's like, oh wow, like the government is kind of like impeding on my ability to do that. And it's like, well, we can't make fun of certain groups, but it's okay to make fun of others. Like you can't make fun of the left, but you can make fun of the right. And it's like, there's suddenly all these rules, and oh, you get banned if you make fun of this, but not that. And that was very alarming to me. So I started just like look into it a little bit deeper, and then like follow the money on a few different things. And a big awakening moment for me was in March. I went to LA, I did Sam Tripoli's podcast to just talk about aliens, you know, like something just kind of basic and regular that most people know exist. And just through talking to him and a few other people on the show, I got a little bit red pilled, like, you know, they were talking to me about Tom Hanks. And so I was like looking more deeply into that stuff and his involvement with the pedophile ring. And when I came back from LA, there were just a couple of nights in a row where I was up to like 3-4 in the morning. I watched Fall of the Cabal all at once. I watched Out of Shadows, and I just was like, holy shit. It felt like I just knew too much. My mind was blown. It was like, all right, well, I might as well learn more about this and see how I can be a force. Cause these things that like, that I learned about, I was like, there's no way to describe them other than evil. You know what I mean? Like, how could you abuse a child like that and like screw them up for life, you know, unless you're like an evil person. So I was like, okay, well, I wasn't a particularly spiritual or religious person, but I was like, I feel like I have to rise to the occasion to be a force of good, because if we're going to this is clearly in the world, if we're going to combat this, like, it kind of inspired me to like rise up and be like, okay, like what can I do to help? How can I be a force of good, really? And I did kind of become more spiritual and religious because it kind of called for it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's so important that people like actually speak up and speak out about it, is because I think the reason that it's been allowed to expand and grow to like how widespread it is today is because it was always happening, and it was always like viewed as a shameful thing that like if it happened to you. And so like I know, you know, kids are getting molested and trafficked and stuff, you know, since the beginning of time. And you know, in the earlier part of the 1900s, like, you know, in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, it was happening a lot. And when families would find out, if it was like through the priest or like a neighbor, it was more damaging to their reputation that it would get out. So like the kids that it happened to, even if their parents knew, a lot of the time nothing was even done about it. And you know, I think it's still kind of that way. It's like if you find out that your kids, that happened to your kids, it would be so hard to deal with. And I think a lot of people would rather just stuff it down and ignore it.
Shame and guilt are anchors that will keep you from like living a full and open life, you know, like having trauma is bad enough, but like the shame and guilt associated with it, like, man, you ever see a person that's just so closed off? And it's like, that kind of shit like ruins your soul. And it's like, if you can't, and that's the thing, it is shameful and it's a shameful thing. And people go, oh, what did you do? What was everybody's role in letting this happen? You know, and it's not really talked about because it's horrible. And, but that's just keeps you kind of like imprisoned by it almost. It like steals your, it steals your future.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. What do you think? What do you see happening in the next couple weeks?
Oh boy. Well, I've talked to some folks that are, that have like given me a lot of hope to think that things will work out. Like, I know, I mean, that's the thing. It's my overall idea is like, don't look to any one person to save you. And I think a lot of folks are quick to do that. Like find some news anchor or some political personality or Alex Jones or somebody that you follow that, that has a great podcast, or like not, no one person should be who you look to like give you all the answers and save you. Right.
Yeah. Like I think, looking to Donald Trump to be your savior is wild. Like I'm not upset about the fact that he's going away. I don't care either way, but I'm upset about what upsets me is like inconsistency, you know, like inconsistency of what people are portrayed as and treated like. So, but yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. What do you think is going to happen, Deborah?
I mean, oops, sorry.
I don't know what's going to happen either. I look ahead to the inauguration and think, shit, they're going to have to just close that old thing down and not,
well, they're planning on not selling tickets to the inauguration. Like I talked to somebody who was like working construction on the Capitol, and he was like, yeah, they're not really selling tickets. Like it's really just going to be for like the big name donors anyway. It's looking like it's not going to be this like public event.
Yeah. You know, what's weird is that Joe Biden's nowhere to be seen the last few weeks.
Hmm. No, he gave a comment about Wednesday.
You did? You had a little press conference?
Or I don't know, it was a video. I don't know if it was a press conference or not, but yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen or heard. I'm not watching on much media right now. But I haven't seen or heard him in a long time. So I don't know.
You're not a fan of Joe Biden either then.
Me?
Yeah.
I'm an anarchist, so I don't believe in any form of government. So I'm not a fan of any of them. You know, I like Ron Paul. I like Thomas Massey. That's about it. So
you like Michael Malice and Hotep Jesus?
I love those guys.
Yeah.
That was awesome that you got Hotep Jesus on. He's a great.
He's a cool, cool guy. Yeah. I mean, if you want to get him too, just like, just keep on him. Just keep persisting with these folks. That's how I feel like I get 90% of my guests is just like by being annoying.
Yeah. So you got to wrap up pretty soon.
I have a thing, but we can do another like 10 or so minutes.
Okay. Let's see. What do you do? I did Truthzilla on Wednesday, and we all did, at the end of the episode, we all did 6 months predictions. How about we start with you, Deborah?
6 months. I'm sorry. I have no predictions.
Come on, I can't.
Well, I can tell you what my hopes.
No.
For the. No. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen in 6 months.
Who's
president? I don't think there's going to be a lot of.
Who's president? Who's president?
Biden.
Okay. Are we wearing masks?
I'm afraid yes, we are.
Mandated masks.
If he is, we
probably
definitely.
Yeah.
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 Let's see. What's going on with the vaccine?
Oh, they're going to just swoop all those people up and give them a shot in the arm.
Swoop everybody up? You think it's going to be mandated? It's going to be enforced by the government?
I mean, that's such a terrible thought. I hope not. I mean, I don't believe that should be mandated at all. I mean, it's our body and we should be able to decide what goes in it.
Nazi, Deborah. That's Nazi talking points right there.
Yeah, that sounds like a white supremacist talking point.
Let's see. What else could we talk about? The thing that I don't like about this whole, like, everybody's freaking out about this, like, oh, Joe Biden's going to enforce 100 days of wearing a mask, which is going to turn into forever wearing a mask. But you know what? We've had 300 days of wearing a mask under Donald Trump. So, like, what's the
right? You're not going to get more. You're not going to get more. Like, I walk around New York City, like, I am the only person I see not wearing a mask. Like, we're probably at least on. If you take out, it's literally me and the crackheads are the people who don't wear a mask walk around New York City. It's like there's so much, I would say the 95% to 98% compliance on that. And you're not going to do better than that, I don't think. I think the folks that are committed to not wearing one, they're certainly not going to be inspired by Joe Biden or threatened or afraid of him to do it. If that's a value that someone has and they don't want to wear a mask, it's like, I don't think they're going to be bullied into it.
Yeah. It's pretty much the same. If you go to like Portland proper here, most, especially like the wealthier, like trendier areas, like in Northwest Portland, like everybody, it's like 100%. But I live like 3 miles over the border on the southeast side of Portland in a different little town in a different county. And it's way less out here. And there's like actually a few little stores that you can get away with not doing it. Not very many, but you know, if you give it a shot at some of them, they won't say anything. But what I am excited about is that for the next, you know, reign of politicians that come in, like, I don't have to make excuses for anybody that I don't really like I've kind of been doing for the next 4 years. Like, it's going to be there in the Joe Biden administration, there's reign of terror is inheriting a pretty big shit sandwich. And I think that he's gonna handle it really, really badly. And I think that it's gonna wake a lot of people up. And like I said, things like right wingers getting woken up to police brutality is things like that are gonna happen. And I think it's just gonna be a mass awakening, and all these people that are kind of on the fence and going along just to get along with masks when there's no evidence and it's summertime and it's nice, I think they're going to start coming to our side. And I'm hopeful. I am hopeful that large scale gray and black markets start emerging, and that people just stop obeying. And I think it's going to happen on large scale. And I think in places like Oregon, where we have a little bit more of an independent free spirit, once you get outside of like Portland, I think it's gonna, you know, the whole Pacific Northwest and areas like that, I think are gonna emerge as being a little bit more free and not putting up with it anymore. So that's how I'm feeling right now. I go back and forth. You want to add any final thoughts, Chrissy?
Right. So like prediction, it's like, cause I've talked to so many people. And so for me, it's more about like being prepared for what might happen. And it's like, I've talked to people who think like militias will form. I've talked to people who are like, stay away from the whole East Coast, like Maine to Florida, like just that's going to be a war zone. There's folks who think that secession is a real possibility as far as like, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, like this whole band of states.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. And so many people telling me to move out of New York, which is like not really a possibility right now, but it's like still something I'm a little freaked out by. But it like, I think, that's the thing too, the idea of forced vaccinations is very scary, especially if you've looked into what's in these, and it's not exactly what it seems, and it's really some other shit. So yeah.
So the one positive thing that I can say about that is if there's doctors out there that aren't speaking out, and there are doctors that are speaking out, and they're being, you know, deplatformed or getting their medical licenses taken away. But the ones that are still around, there's doctors that'll shoot a vaccine into a garbage can or into an orange, and we'll find out who they are, and we'll be able to get by that way.
That poor orange. No. Yeah. I've heard that it's like, it will destroy your placenta, that like, don't think about having kids or like possibly, you know what I mean? Like, and you get that into a kid, like, man, you're fucking up their whole life. It's like, it's going to fuck with your DNA. It's going to fuck with your ability to conceive.
Yeah. They're telling men to have a sperm sample or like sperm stored before they get the vaccine, just in case.
Well, yeah, it seems that every 100 years, the powers that be want to kill off a whole slew of people because, yeah, there are a lot of people on this planet, and they're worried about conserving resources. So it's like you look back to like 1918, 1920, what was it, the Spanish flu? A bunch of troops came back, and that's how they sold folks on those vaccinations. Like, well, we got to protect the troops that are coming back, and like a whole shit ton of people died. So it just seems like oddly convenient this is happening again 100 years later. And you look into what the Bill Gates's vaccines have done in countries like India and Africa, and like his vaccines are just straight up not allowed in these countries anymore because of the women that have been sterilized and the birth defects that have happened in India. But then a lot of people will say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory too. Yeah, you know,
just like Dr. Drew. Dr. Drew says that's a conspiracy theory.
Dr. Drew is a Bill Gates apologist.
Yeah.
So you don't know where people's loyalties lie. You don't know how people are getting paid. I would say, like, just be, it's good to be wary. And you just don't know who's paying who to say what or to believe in what. So I think the best thing you can do is like find like-minded people, try to learn as much as you can, read as much as you can, watch as many, you know, watch the video that looks like a crazy anti-vax video. Why not? I mean, like, and I think a lot of folks who are like hesitant to look into this stuff is because deep down they are suspect of it, and they might think it's true.
I think I think terrible things are going to start happening to people who've taken that vaccine about 6 months in. So, you know, hold out, and you know, I'm not hopeful that happens, but if it does, you know, that'll help people like me who don't want to take it. So,
I mean, think about it. We have like the biggest generation are now entering their like older years, the baby boomers. Like isn't it funny that like that's who the virus is most targeting, that those are the folks that are most vulnerable. And of course, like the straight up unhealthy people with a lot of like whatever,
the obese
core morbidities or whatever. And those are the folks that have been convinced that they're terrified to go outside without a mask. These are the folks that are 100% convinced that they would push through people to get this vaccine. And it's like, ew, I feel like you guys are the ones that are trying to kill off. So it really sucks. But yeah, and like find your people, like be prepared. But also I think it's very important, like prayer and manifesting, that shit is so real. And I was just like, just today I was like saying, okay, 2021, I'm gonna start meditating. And I was actually like scared too, because it's like I'm scared like what I'll see or what I'll find out or something. But I actually like meditated today. I was like, I'm just gonna do it for 10 minutes, and I just felt like such overwhelming calm. And it's such a small thing, is just like trying to calm your thoughts. And then I was reading this thing, because I follow a lot of accounts on Twitter that are just like about The Secret and whatever, manifesting and stuff. And I think an important takeaway is to like examine the things that are holding your attention. Maybe you're obsessing over and you're in a fear loop or whatever, a concern loop, a worry loop, and like take the things that are holding your attention and be like, okay, does this support, like, how does this make me feel to focus on it? If it makes me feel fearful and closed off and small and shut down and like it dims my light, like notice that. And I believe that stuff is really powerful. And I think if you can get millions of people, a large amount of humanity to feel that way, shut down, not powerful, scared, small, like that has a real effect on human consciousness. So I think, you know, you want to focus on the stuff that expands you, that makes you feel joyful, calling friends and family, like hanging out with the fucking babies, you know, petting dogs, like really. And it doesn't mean that you're delusional or you're pretending there's not horrible things going on in the world, which there are, but I think there's something really powerful about not just like positive thinking, but like really, really focusing on what you want to create in the world or for yourself, rather than like obsessing about your worst fears, because whatever you focus on expands. And that's something that I have to remind myself of all the time.
Yeah.
Good advice.
That's great advice. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to stress is just there's people out there, you can find them, that believe in the same things that you do and want to live the same life that you do. So have you ever, I'll take us out on this. Have you ever heard of the website called freedomcells.org?
Freedom cells? Cells? Like cellular or like cells? Like sex
like
cells?
Like C-E-L-L-S.
Oh, okay. No.
So check it out. It's like kind of this, it's like a social networking website, and you can go on there and you make like a profile, and then you put where you are and people come up, and it's like all like liberty-minded freedom people that, you know, want to form like little groups, of just like a mutual support group, mutual aid group for like as anything from as small as like, you know, friendship and spending time with people to like when the shit goes down, like we each have like a specific little duty that we can do to help each other. And yeah. So you go on there, you make a profile, you put where you live in Manhattan or whatever. I would want to know what's going on around where you are, if there's anybody that's involved with it.
What are my skills? I can do French braiding.
Everybody has skills.
I can give a decent massage. I can give a decent manicure, pedicure. I can bake, not cook, but I can bake okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could be a babysitter. You could do anything. And
yeah, I can fold pretty well. I can do Marie Kondo folding really well. Yeah,
perfect. You could organize closets, all that stuff. But yeah. And then I went on there, you know, last summer and found people. And now we have like this big, huge meetup every other week.
Oh, that's
like,
nice.
It's up to like 40 people now. And then we have like farmers. We do like a little secret farmers market and all this stuff. So check that out if you get the time. It's pretty cool.
Deborah, have you been red-pilled since the start of this podcast? What's your mind really changed on, if anything?
A lot of stuff. It's been opened up to a lot of stuff. I'm still skeptical, but I am a skeptic by nature. So that's, you know,
that's important.
Go ahead, Deborah. Sorry. Go. You finish. Sorry.
No, just that I'm able to hear and take in everything, and it doesn't necessarily have to mean it's a us or them. It just means that I'm open to hearing about it. And, you know, I think that's a positive for sure. I mean, you know, what harm is there? I mean, I knew nothing about flat earth until a week ago. And what harm is there in knowing that there are, you know, theories out there that don't fit my game plan or whatever, you know? I'm not totally red pilled, but you know, I see no harm in learning about things that are new to me.
So you're pink pilled.
Purple pilled.
Purple pilled.
It's halfway.
Purple.
That's good. And being a skeptic is the best thing you can be. That's I would take a skeptic over someone who just believes everything they see and hear any day. And that's the thing, is keeping an open mind and know, okay, this is possible. That's all you have to do is consider that this is possible. Yeah. And that's.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I try to explain to the small group of friends that I have shared this with that I'm even doing this, that light bulbs work, electricity works. I don't need to know why. I see it works. And so that's kind of the, you know, I don't need to understand every aspect for me to be able to.
Have you been reading the AA Big Book? Because that's what they say in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
About a light bulb?
That's the example that they use about believing in God.
You know what? I must have heard it. I must have picked it up from somebody else.
Yeah.
Which is...
My example is, seeing how the sausage is made. But yeah, I like the light bulb better. It's a better
visual. Did you see all those... I saw a bunch of pictures on Twitter of like, I don't know, some site showed a microscopic view of like a slice of a hot dog.
Week.
It was pretty gross. There's like aluminum and stuff in there.
Oh God. Yeah. Like raccoon tails and stuff.
So, yeah. I guess if I deny it, if I say I'm not going to take a vaccine, I can't eat hot dogs anymore either. So, but
yeah, this is so powerful what you're doing. Cause at the end of the day, it's like, it's not a us versus them. It's, if anything, it's us versus the powers that be. And like, they are the happiest when we are fighting each other, because then we're not looking into how to heal your own body, how to natural cures or like how to empower yourself, you know? And that's like the best takeaway is like, how can we come together? Because like they want us very divided because we're easier to control that way.
Perfect. Well, we'll let you get out of here. Do you want to plug
anything? Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, I was so excited to get you when you finally started following me and I was able to send you a DM. I was really excited. So.
I was hearing and seeing about you for a while and I just was like, I thought I was following you and then I was like, oh, fuck, I'm not. And like, Deborah, serious props to you because I came into this like, it's like, you know what it is? Like, I can feel you listening. I can feel you really listening, which is like amazing and not something that folks do. Like you go into a conversation, you're like, all right, these aren't going to be people who agree with me, but it's like you listen, like you really truly listen, which is like, that's a gift, you know, like that's,
I'm trying.
That's a positive thing.
I don't think she realizes how like abnormal it is for somebody with her beliefs to sit down and listen to people with other beliefs, which it is.
It's brave. It's actually brave to listen to folks. And it's a good reminder to me to like be the same way with people who I don't think that I agree with, you know?
Yeah.
Cause it comes down to personal stories. Like, especially you, Adam, you're like, I don't like the fucking cops. I've had a lifetime of bad experiences with them. It's like, that's valid. You know what I mean? Just like my dad, like we grew up, he was a landscaper. He would complain about, oh, the Jews. He'd have all these like professional, he'd have clients who happened to be Jewish who wouldn't pay him. He would have clients who happened to be doctors, lawyers, who happened to be rude to him. And it's like, so these beliefs that we have as people don't come out of thin air. They come out of our experiences. So just like knowing that, you know, people aren't the way they are out of thin air. It's good to talk about what happens to us.
Perfect. Well, where can we hear about your experiences? And do you have any diving competitions coming up?
Oh, no, no. Okay. I actually have dreams where I'm back in college or high school or whatever, and I'm at a diving meet, and I'm on the 3-meter springboard, and I'm actually like as I am now, and I'm going, oh, fuck. I have there's no way I'm going to do a 2.5. Like, I haven't practiced in years. And I think that's probably like a fear dream or something. Or I'm like on the stage in high school and I'm like, oh, I didn't rehearse. I don't know the lines. Fuck. Yeah. but yeah, follow me on all the things at Chrissy Mayer on all this platforms, unless I'm getting banned from them as we speak. Check out the Chrissy Mayer podcast on iTunes, YouTube, Spotify, SoundCloud. And I do a show on Compound Media called The Wet Spot. And Compound Media is a subscription-based network. If you're familiar with Opie and Anthony, from like the early aughts, it's Anthony Cumia, that's his network. And yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. This was great.
Thank you
so
much.
Fun. Thank you.
I hope we get to talk again.
Yes, we will.
Friends thanks now. For listening, guys. Thank you for being here, Deborah. Sorry I yelled at you earlier. I'm not mad. I love you so much.
I love you too, Adam. We do.
Oh my God, so much love.
All right,
it's
guys.
Disgusting. Okay.
Get
have a great
us.
Day.
We love you all.
You guys are great. Love you. Bye.
Bye.